From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. A few weeks ago, we celebrated the Go Red for Women Day, in which we wore red in honor of the fight against cardiovascular disease in women. And February is Heart Month, of course. Today, I've picked three articles to discuss with you related to cardiovascular disease in women, which were published in this past week. The date of this recording is February 25th, 2019. The first article will look at the long-term risk of heart failure in breast cancer patients who receive chemotherapy with or without trastuzumab. The next, a look at adverse drug reaction reporting related to medications for heart failure. And the third is an article looking at sex differences in heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, particularly looking at pathophysiology and hemodynamics. The first paper is entitled Long-Term Risk of Heart Failure in Breast Cancer Patients After Adjuvant Chemotherapy with or Without Trastuzumab. And it comes from a large study in the Danish Breast Cancer Cooperative Group database. The study looked at over 8,000 patients, 25% of whom were HER2 positive, average age 52 years, who received chemotherapy, including anthracycline, and if they were HER2 positive, trastuzumab was added. Patients were excluded from this analysis if they already had a diagnosis of heart failure. Of the remaining 8,812 patients studied, 217 had HER2 positive disease and received both chemotherapy and trastuzumab, and roughly 6,700 patients were HER2 negative and received solely chemotherapy as part of the adjuvant medical treatment. The authors looked at a study endpoint of heart failure assessed before and after 18 months in a landmark analysis to look at early heart failure and then later heart failure. And they did a multivariate analysis to adjust for age and comorbidities in order to try to establish what was the hazard ratio of adding trastuzumab to the likelihood of heart failure later on. The median follow-up was over 5 years, and there was no difference between the two groups regarding cancer and cardiovascular mortality before and after 18 months. In the group that received trastuzumab, by 9 years, 2.8% had heart failure versus 0.8% of the group treated with chemotherapy alone. When they looked at both short-term and long-term outcomes, there was an effect of trastuzumab, the hazard ratio 8.7 for early heart failure and 1.9 for late heart failure. After they adjusted all of this for comorbidities, etc., they once again identified that trastuzumab had a hazard ratio that was highly significant. When they looked at early heart failure, this was about 3.87, and for later heart failure, about 2. The findings suggest, certainly, that the development of heart failure occurs in up to 3% of patients who receive trastuzumab over time, and that this is present even after accounting for other hazards in terms of comorbidities. And I think as the field of cardio-oncology grows, the ability for cardiovascular providers to understand the potential early and late effects of chemotherapeutic agents is going to become increasingly important. And certainly this subspecialty of cardiovascular care continues to be an emerging and important area. The second article I wanted to talk to you about today was entitled Adverse Drug Reactions to Guideline-Recommended Heart Failure Drugs in Women, a Systematic Review of the Literature. It was also published last week. And the authors wanted to see, as they looked at PubMed and Embase, articles that talked about adverse drug reactions to guideline-recommended heart failure drugs, ACE inhibitors, beta blockers, ARBs, mineralocorticoid receptor antagonists, ivabradine, and digoxin in both men and women. They wanted to see just to what degree was current literature reporting on adverse drug reactions and whether or not they actually reported on gender-based differences in adverse drug reactions. They did a very extensive literature search and ultimately identified just 11 studies, which included about 154,000 individuals, mean age 64, 25% of them were women, to look at this question. Four of the studies reported more adverse drug reactions in women compared to men, while just one reported more adverse reactions in men. And in the remaining six, there was no difference between the sexes. Three studies reported a higher risk of ACE inhibitor-related ADRs in women, and one showed a higher digoxin-related mortality risk for women. Just one study reported a higher risk of mineralocorticoid-related ADRs for men. And there was no gender difference for ARBs and beta blockers. There were really no data available for ivabradine in this study. The authors concluded, I think correctly so, that current reporting of adverse drug reactions, which is very important for post-approval assessment of safety, is really inadequate when it looks at specific gender markers. And so we need a lot more effort in this area. Clearly, an analysis like this really asks the question, can ACC, AHA, ESC, the CDC, FDA, NHLBI, Heart Failure Society, can we work together to demand more appropriate reporting of adverse drug reactions so that we can really get more gender-specific safety information for our patients? I think this is an important area for the future. The last article was actually a study looking at sex differences in heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, and it was actually a fairly detailed invasive hemodynamic and echocardiographic analysis looking at HFpEF in a small group of men and women. The patients were defined as having a HFpEF if they had exertional intolerance, an ejection fraction greater than or equal to 50%, and a wedge pressure of either 15 or above at baseline or 25 millimeters of mercury with exercise. Of course, they excluded patients with mild valvular disease, pulmonary disease, etc. And the patients all had exercise right heart cath using supine cycle ergometry. The invasive hemodynamic measurements included pressure, mixed venous gases, and lactates, and they were taken both at rest and peak. And a good share of the patients also had transthoracic echo within a day or up to 3 months after their right heart cath. In this particular small study, there were 161 patients, 71% were women. They had a higher wedge pressure index to peak exercise, and they had a lower systemic and pulmonary arterial compliance. They also had a greater rise in lactate index to peak workload. And the echo suggests that there were higher E to E prime ratios, both at rest and at peak, and a higher ejection fraction and smaller ventricles in women. So the authors, in a provocative way, said the study is the first to investigate gender differences in the hemodynamic exercise profiles of HFpEF, and they identified both cardiac, pulmonary, and systemic contributors potentially to impaired exercise tolerance, and that there might be gender differences here. This is really, I guess, a glimpse of potential gender differences in HFpEF. Clearly, we need to phenotype HFpEF better. We need to understand whether the diastolic noncompliance has to do with hypertrophy or ischemia or fibrosis or infiltration or what. And then, in addition to that, start asking the questions, are there gender differences? And if so, should this affect how we diagnose and treat HFpEF in men versus women? The article is really a future promise, but I found it to be interesting and certainly is consistent with the theme of today's message, which looks at heart disease in women. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org, and you can find this information on the website. Both the journal scans and the articles will be posted. Also, find a new educational catalog featured on ACC.org under the Education and Meetings tab. Using this tool, you can sort our educational offerings by various formats, and of course, many of them are free. Find us online or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you very much.